Is Radolf real too? Were there any other incidents apart from the King David Hotel that stick out in your mind from your days in Jerusalem that you can describe in detail?
I wouldn't say there were any of a really major nature, merely because there were things happening on a large number of days during the week, and it was part and parcel of the daily life, you might say. So one didn't sort of take quite as much notice as one might have done in ordinary circumstances.
There were very Zionist armed groups like the Haganah, the Stern
Haganah, the
Gang,
Stern Gang, underground movements, in other words. They were
Ibn Zweilumi and so on.
yes, exactly. They were the principal ones. Those.
Who did you consider your main enemy? Could you distinguish between the three?
Generally speaking, I think we found we always regarded, shall we say, the Stern Gang as being the most severe enemy of the lot.
How are they so different?
In their rather ruthless methods and generally the way they went about things, they're obviously their outlook was to kill British, kill Arab, and generally work towards the establishment of the Jewish state by any means whatsoever.
Did you know the names of the leaders of the Zionist gangs?
Yes, one did at the time, but you know the names generally escape me now. It's so long afterwards. Begin, of course, was one of the principal leaders, if I remember rightly, of the Stern Gang. Begin, that's right. Other leaders, I can't quite honestly remember the names now, though obviously at the time one knew them.
But you knew them and you had files on them and
Oh,
you had
yes.
photographs and so on.
Oh, exactly. Oh, yes. One had all the necessary information, but they were very clever men, no question of that. They didn't expose themselves unnecessarily, merely because they were so valuable as leaders to their own particular units that they couldn't afford to be captured and then put away, or, as would probably have happened, there were sufficient crimes against them for them to go on trial, and, well, that would have been that.
But would you know whether an individual Zionist leader was in one particular city?
Very rarely. There was the odd occasion when CID at police headquarters in the Russian compound in Jerusalem did get information that a certain underground leader was in a certain part of the old city. And I can recollect to this day being instructed one morning to go to such and such an area and place and try and get hold of a certain gentleman. I can't remember the name exactly now, but their intelligence was such that as soon as Jews saw police cars or vans approaching a Jewish area, the information would go through that area as quickly as possible, and somebody who might have been a target would just, well, to put it bluntly, get the hell out of it as quickly as possible. And therefore, on several occasions, I know they got away before we got there.
What was the Russian compound?
That was police headquarters in Jerusalem.
Why was it called the Russian compound?
Because it used to be, I think I'm right in saying it used to be a Russian religious building. I'm not absolutely sure on that, but certainly it was a building directly connected with Russia.
How were the Arabs organized in comparison with the Zionists in Jerusalem at that time?
The Arabs had their own individual gangs, but they didn't operate to quite the same extent in a big town as they did in rural areas. And they had a number of different leaders. In other words, I would say that they weren't organized quite as well as the Jews were. In fact, quite definitely not as well as the Jews were, who had these individual underground movements. Arabs carried out certain atrocities, yes, and murders of Jews, but on a more widespread scale. And I can't remember any, at the moment, any actual main individual case where they did anything big, shall we say.
Were the police also a target of the Arab gangs?
Oh yes, they were, merely because the Arabs, you see, took into account the fact that the British government, at an earlier date, at various dates, had broached the subject of partition of Palestine, of Jewish immigration being allowed from southern Eastern Europe, and therefore the Arabs themselves already regarded, shall we say, Jerusalem basically as their city, and therefore not subject, shall we say, to, granting favours to the Jewish element.
What about the question, as far as the police were concerned, with fraternising or making friends with Arabs and Jews from the civil population? Were you encouraged to do that? Or?
No, all ranks were definitely encouraged not to carry out any fraternization of any kind, merely because it, in view of the nature of the job, it just didn't tie in at that stage. Had things been more peaceful, and had there been, no unpleasantness going on, well, then it would have been a different matter. But under the circumstances that prevailed during the last, 4 years, if you like, in both Jerusalem and other areas, it wasn't on. In fact, it was definitely out.
What would have been the problem of fraternizing at that stage? People exploiting it?
That, I think, would have been a thought, yes. But there was no... I don't think there was any real desire on the part of the police to really fraternize in any way with either side, because they knew that because of the job they were doing, they weren't exactly loved, shall we say, by either of the other sides, and therefore it just didn't come into it.
But what about policemen having love affairs with people from the...
Well, to my recollection, I don't quite honestly remember anything of that nature at all. I don't really and honestly think it occurred.
Would they have been hauled up before higher authority if they had?
No, because after all, if you, to a certain extent, that is of a personal nature. But nevertheless, I think that if a policeman had indicated at that time that he wished to marry one or other, I think he might have been politely asked to leave the force.
Now, you moved from Jerusalem to Haifa in 46.
Yes, that's correct.
Can you tell me about that move, please?
Well, I think it was largely to do with the fact that there'd been some changes in officers down in Haifa, and a superintendent had retired, and they were sending a new man down there, and I think they wanted, him to have a, I know perhaps I shouldn't say this, a reasonable number two with him, put it that way. And therefore I was asked by the Inspector General if I would transfer myself to Haifa and, take on certain duties down there. There was a very difficult problem just beginning to arise in Haifa at that time, because all these Jews from southern Europe were being brought, intercepted in the Mediterranean. They were being brought by the Royal Navy into Haifa, and then they were being transshipped from Haifa to Cyprus internment camps. And there was a lot of work to be done in that particular direction, merely to avoid trouble in the port while these transshipments were taking place, and to generally keep the peace in the town when both Jews and Arabs knew that, in fact, these things were happening. And there were quite a few, difficult situations that had to be overcome at that time.
Can you describe any of them?
Well, not so much a question of describing an individual incident, but the fact that, for example, mines would be put into the water, hoping that, in fact, a British ship that was coming in to transfer the Jews from there to Cyprus internment camps might cause some damage and therefore wouldn't be able to go, and there'd be a hold-up on something like that. The Arabs generally, I don't remember causing any particular troubles at the time, because basically they were not against, shall we say, the transshipment of these Jews to Cyprus, because it meant that no further Jews over and above the monthly quota that was already coming in was not being increased in any way, so that they had, shall we say, the least argument to cause any interference at all.
Which did you prefer, the job in Haifa or the job in Jerusalem?
I liked both. There was plenty of work to be done in both places, and to a large extent all the rest of the work in Haifa was very much the same as what had been doing in Jerusalem anyway. There was just merely this sort of specialized job as and when these transshipments had to take place. And occasionally parties of Jews had previously come in before there were any naval ships to transship them, and then they had to go to an internment camp in the northern part of Palestine until such time as there were naval ships there to take them out of the territory.
What did the Jewish ships that were trying to break into the country look like?
Well, they weren't actually trying to break into the country in the sense that I don't think they ever expected to get as far. They had sailed in these ships from these southern European ports, and in nine cases out of ten, these craft had been intercepted by the Royal Navy in the Mediterranean and were then towed into Haifa, or the Jews were taken on board the ship and the craft was merely towed according to the size of it and everything else.
Can you paint a picture of what they were like?
Very variable in both size, type, and general composition. In other words, the Jews had to make do with whatever craft they could get their hands on at the other side. And as they were so anxious to get into the country, they did at times take rather alarming risks with the types of small craft that they did come in.
What condition were they in, the people?
Pretty poor, generally. I was sorry for them. I didn't like the job in the sense that one could not be anything else but feel sorry for these people, because they'd had one hell of a hard time. a lot of them were in a very poor condition indeed, and one felt they couldn't come into the country because they were in excess of the monthly quota. And they weren't badly treated in the Cyprus, I know that, in Cyprus internment camps. But nevertheless, one couldn't but feel that here were people who, over a long period of time, had been hoping to find their way into Palestine. They got so far, and then they were shipped out again, and they didn't really know how long they might have to wait in Cyprus before they could form part of the monthly quota and come back into the country.
What was their attitude towards you?
A large proportion of them were apathetic in the sense that they had such a bad time. Half the time I don't think they quite honestly realised what was going on, but there were some belligerent ones amongst them in the younger male element, and one did at times have quite a difficult job carrying out the transfer onto the Royal Navy ships.
Do any of the boats specifically stick out in your mind?
No, not in particular. I can't think of any particular one or any named one that was of, shall we say, more significance than the others. I'd put them more or less all, in the same category, in the sense that here were a large number of very unfortunate people and their misery and everything else wasn't yet over. In other words, they might have to wait several months before, in fact, they eventually got into Palestine.
How did the Royal Navy carry out their tasks?
In a very good way indeed, and I always felt that they acted with, very considerable restraint and a fair bit of kindness as well.
Was there any American presence there at the time who sympathised with this mass attempt of the Jews to get into Palestine?
Not that I can remember, no. No, I do not remember any American presence whatsoever. No.
No journalists or people of that kind?
No, journalists wouldn't have been allowed directly into the docks anyway, from any nation at all, because this was a military operation after all. Although it was being done by police, nevertheless, we were, at that time, of course, in any case, the police were a military force under certain acts that had been passed, and therefore, the object was not to make these transshipments more public than they need be, because of the Jewish resentment in the town and area, in Haifa and the surrounding areas.
Were Jewish-Arab relations in Haifa much different from what they were in Jerusalem?
My own opinion and recollection, slightly better than in Jerusalem.
Can you think of any reason why that might have been so?
Merely, I think, because up to a certain time, atrocities, atrocities, had been smaller in number than they had in some other parts. Therefore, there wasn't quite the same feeling of antagonism between Jew and Arab. Mark you, that didn't last forever, because there did come a time when, in fact, the Jews blew up police headquarters in Haifa.
What do you remember about that?
Very little in one sense, because it happened outside normal working hours. It was quite a clever move. A large lorry with this enormous great container of explosives in the back just one evening, backed up onto the perimeter fence outside police headquarters in Kingsway, and I'm not sure offhand what you call the type of lorry, but anyhow, it is capable of rolling or throwing a thing off the back of it over a fairly high fence, which is exactly what it did. And the thing was timed to go off so many seconds or something, or minutes after this had happened, and, well, that's exactly what did occur. I wasn't actually there at the time. It was outside of normal working hours. I think I'd gone back to my place of living, which is only half a mile away. I don't remember the exact time of the day, but it was evening time. And it did a very, very considerable amount of damage and killed some British police in the process.
How much personal danger did you feel yourself to be in whilst you were in Haifa and Jerusalem?
Basically, it was something you did not try to think about. You had to put it to the back of your mind, because I don't think if you didn't do that, that you'd have done your job properly. There were the odd occasions when you did get a certain amount of feeling and a certain amount of thought. Have I been lucky? Am I going to continue to be lucky? But it wasn't something that one thought about too much, because it was part and parcel of the job, almost, you might say, in a sense, of being in active service on a battlefield.
Did you ever get personal notes directed at you or communications threatening your life?
I don't remember having a personal note, no, saying that I was a particular target. No, I do not remember that. One had narrow escapes, yes. I'd been shot at. I was shot at in Haifa once, travelling in a taxi going through the town, but, well, the bullets didn't go the right way, shall we say, put it that way. They went through the taxi, but they never touched either myself or another man that I had with me or the driver. So we got away with it.
Which street was that in?
This was in the main street, Kingsway, just coming into Kingsway, on the way to our headquarters. But those things were of fairly regular occurrence, so you got used to them.
Who were you with?
Another police officer, and the taxi driver was a civilian anyway, because sometimes it was safer to take a taxi than to be in one of your own vehicles.
So you were both in uniform?
Oh, yes, yes, always in uniform.
What was the uniform of the Palestine police?
Well, I could best describe that by showing you one of the photos here that I've got, which I can...
If you can put it into words, though, because we
need
it
in into words.
Words.
All right. A blue uniform in the wintertime and a khaki drill uniform in the summer, basically.
What did you think of the performance of the troops, the various British units that were stationed in Palestine whilst you were there? Did you feel that they did a good job or not?
I did. I had quite a lot to do with 6th Airborne Division, who were in Haifa, in fact, at that time, and I lived with them in their barracks when we'd reached the stage where it was no longer safe to be in a private dwelling place of your own. And I found them to be an excellent lot, very cooperative, very well commanded, and I had great admiration for the 6th Airborne Division. They were one of the principal units that I had, shall we say, more to do with than at other times in Jerusalem.
Did they particularly stick out as doing an especially good job amongst the various units in Palestine?
Yes, I thought so.
Why were they so good?
I think because of their background training. After all, the Airborne Division does get certain specialist training that other units don't get, and I always found their discipline to be of a high standard.
Were there any other units who served in Palestine that you came across personally who stand out in your mind as being particularly good?
Not that I can remember by name or number now, no. But there were other units, and I never came across a poor unit of any kind, shape or size. I always thought the army in Palestine did a very good job of work indeed and were well administered and commanded.
You mentioned the armoured car patrols
yes.
in Jerusalem. Did
yes.
they have those in Haifa?
Oh, yes. These were, I forget the actual date now, when they came into being, shortly, if I remember rightly, after I transferred over from the police mobile force. They started the armoured car patrols in Jerusalem, in Haifa, and in Lydda and Tel Aviv. And in fact, they went by their titles. J.O.P. stood for Jewish. H.O.P. stood for Haifa Operational Patrol, you see. Jerusalem Operational Patrol, Haifa Operational Patrol, and Tel Aviv and Lydda. And they were an addition to what had happened in the normal police force prior to the latter trouble, shall we say.
How would they operate?
On what you might term a normal patrolling business through quarters, not going into individual Jewish quarters or Arab quarters unless there was trouble, but patrolling, you might say, the fringe areas, and merely keeping their eyes very sharp indeed for any likely troubles that might occur. They were, of course, in radio contact all the time, and in the event of anything that appeared likely to happen, well, they could pass the message back straight away and reinforcements could go out in other vehicles to the area where they had indicated either actual trouble or potential trouble.
How valuable do you think they were?
Very valuable indeed. They were only instituted at a much later date, in fact, only at the time, I think, when I went to Jerusalem myself, which was at the end of December 1944.
How many men would be in an armoured car?
3 men plus a driver, as far as I can remember now, yes. And they had machine guns and the turret. And I think they carried a certain amount of, what should we say, not exactly prestige, I'm trying to think. I don't want to say terror either, but something between the two against either Jews or Arabs who might have some ideas of causing trouble.
Did they open fire very much?
Overall, no. They were under fairly strict orders from the point of view of using their weapons, as applies, you might say, to any police force anyway, if not...